Since we have you all here, I have to go welcome the International Little League Association at 3 o'clock, so I will be leaving at 2:45, just so you know.
You saw a microphone and an audience. So
that's right. What's that? It's a conference.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call a roll.
Adams?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Potter?
Here.
Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 1114, a proof of work program to update the city comprehensive plan, establish a public engagement committee and program, and direct the Bureau of Planning to submit these programs to the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development for state approval.
With this hearing on the periodic review work program for the city's comp plan or comprehensive plan, the City of Portland meets the state periodic review requirements. City Council will consider the larger Portland plan work program at a later date to allow more time to incorporate the questions and issues raised by the public during the May and June meetings and the comments that will be taken at the hearing today. Our work on the Portland plan will continue, and planning staff will be working closely with both me and the mayor-elect to ensure a smooth transition between administrations. I have a strong commitment to the public engagement process through Vision PDX and the VIA Coalition in hopes that the Portland plan will really be the community's plan. Mayor-elect Adams will be looking for ways to move the plan forward, and we'll be working together on that. And today we have Gil Kelly and the planning staff will walk us through the comp plan presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the City Council. Gil Kelly, Director of the Bureau of Planning, and with me today are Steve Dotterer, the principal in charge of the project for the Bureau of Planning, and Howard Shapiro, who's representing the Planning Commission today, whose recommendations are before you on the scope. Reiterate one point the mayor just made. We've been before you on a number of occasions with the larger Portland plan effort aspirations, and we will continue to work with the mayor and mayor-elect on fleshing out that work program. We're here really with a narrower and sort of procedural but important step today, which is to get your approval, hopefully, of the work plan for a piece of that effort, which is updating the city's comprehensive plan under that larger a long-term strategy for the growth and development of the city. Within the comprehensive plan, there are five elements, and Steve Dotterer will describe these, that the state is looking at in terms of their periodic review program, and that's what today's action is focused on. Periodic review simply means that from time to time, the state periodically reviews the plans, adopted plans of local jurisdictions for timeliness and compliance with state planning goals. So that's the period we're in, and we're incorporating that task within the larger Portland plan task. This is subject to a public hearing, as it was in front of the Planning Commission, and what's before you is both a work plan and a public engagement plan for accomplishing those periodic review tasks that Steve will describe. We are obligated to respond to comments that we receive in testimony and in writing at the public hearing for pieces that are relevant to the periodic review tasks, and so we'll be coming back after the public hearing today to respond to anything which is relevant to the narrower set of tasks here, and we'll be responding, of course, to other comments we receive on the larger Portland plan scope when we return to you in a couple of months. If there is more time needed to respond today within the record to comments we hear that are within that narrower periodic review scope, we have reserved some time tentatively on your agenda for August 27th to return, but we hope to be able to do that today. So with that, let me turn it over to Steve, who's going to sort of walk you through the pieces of this. Thanks.
All right. Steve Dotterer from the Bureau of Planning. First of all, as a housekeeping matter, the blue box on the floor is the public record that's available for examination during the meeting and afterwards. So the record is here for this periodic review. hearing. As Gil mentioned, the state requires that cities periodically review and if warranted, update their comprehensive plans. And we got a letter saying that we were entering comprehensive plan review on November 13th. And the first phase is to do an assessment of our comprehensive plan and to determine whether we need to do updating of the plan. Now, the state, for periodic review purposes, they have narrowed there's 19 state goals. The five state goals that are subject to periodic review are economic development, housing, public facilities or infrastructure, transportation and urban development. Urban development meaning the amount of growth in jobs and employment that we would expect the city to take. And we need to determine then that our plan is consistent with those goals in terms of state law. City needs to submit a periodic review work program, the item before council today, to the state DLCD. If it's approved, then we have 3 years after that for the city to do the necessary updates for the comprehensive plan. As a first step in doing the periodic review, city staff from the Bureaus of Planning, Environmental Services, Housing and Community Development, Sustainability, Transportation, Water, and the Portland Development Commission evaluated the comp plan and the associated regulations in light of the state law, current conditions, and relevant trends, and then the community needs and desires expressed through the Vision PDX process and other forums. And the Planning Commission on April 22nd held a public hearing based on that evaluation. And I think the main point is that both that staff evaluation and the public testimony made clear that the current comp plan needs to be updated in order to meet the regional planning direction, state law, and changing conditions. As a result, that same group of bureaus prepared a preliminary work program, which was the subject of a public hearing before the Planning Commission on the 24th of June. The Planning Commission considered both the state-mandated periodic review evaluation and the testimony. They also took comments on the overall Portland plan work plan, which will come back at a later date. The testimony at those two public hearings was focused on a couple of points. One was the public participation that was recommended, and as a result, we made some modifications to the public participation proposal. And schools were another area where there was a lot of public testimony. In addition, there was testimony supporting addressing historic and archaeological resources and coordination with Metro. And finally, we got a number of comments from state agencies asking us to make minor adjustments to the work plan in order to meet their requirements. Based on that testimony and the commission direction, the staff modified the work plan and the engagement strategy, and the Plan Commission adopted it on July 8th. And Howard Shapiro is here to tell you about the issues that were important to the commission.
Good afternoon. I am Howard Shapiro. I'm a planning commissioner, and I'm hoping to speak for all of my colleagues in bringing two issues that don't necessarily get covered by this state-mandated review. Just as an aside, the state called for a review of this comp plan at a perfect time, in my opinion, because we do need to look at our city and how it's going to grow in the next 20 years. So the important consideration the state gives to this adds urgency to the importance of our work. The two issues that I want to bring to your attention beyond the state-mandated review are a public involvement process in which three commissioners and six people that we would ask the mayor to appoint would form an advisory committee to review the plan as it evolves. That's particularly important, in my opinion, because one of the keys in making this plan work is benchmarks, is measuring its success as it goes through the process. And we'll want to review that with this advisory committee, in spite of the fact that I made a note of this, that we've had Vision PDX, a series of three public summits, and nine workshops. I still think we need to monitor the progress of this plan as we go through it, amend it as needed, and this committee comprised of three commissioners, myself, Amy Cortez, and Leilani Ovalis. I hope I said that right. Ovalis, is mm-hmm. that right?
Mm-hmm.
Are the three commissioners that will be joined by the group that the mayor appoints. So we're very anxious to get that going and hope that you'll do that for us. In addition, I want to highlight what Steve said about the schools. We heard testimony, and as individuals, we are committed that the public schools be a very much important part of the plan. So the topics raised were not under the city's direct control, but we do need to take that under consideration and continue to make the schools part of the dialogue. So finally, I guess I'm asking you for the following recommendation: to approve the periodic review, evaluation, and work program. That's on the table right now. To approve the public engagement work program, and for us to come back and return in the near future to consider the Portland plan work. In addition, I was just talking to Gil. I think it would be very useful if we had a joint session with the City Council to talk about the plan going forward, to have a real informal conversation about how our thoughts work and how we collaborate together. And so as we come back to you, I hope that we can pull off that kind of joint session. So the recommendations are approve the evaluation, approve the public engagement program, and then we will return to you in the near future and ask you to accept the Portland Plan work program. I've said before, and I'll say again, this work is critically important at a critically important time, and personally, I'm very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you, folks. How many folks we have signed to testify on this matter?
14.
14. Please call the first three.
First three are Dixie Johnston, Carter Cummings, and Don Rasmussen. All three, And they'll be followed by David Rice, David Ellis, and Wendy Ann Wright.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes. Go ahead and proceed.
I'm Dixie Johnston, co-land use chair of Collinsview Neighborhood Association. I urge the City Council to take action on city school policy issues requested by the July 13th school community and student advocate letter. There were 10 signatures on that. And also on the August 6th Southeast Public Lands letter to you. It is imperative that all comp plan policies and other city ordinances be made available to the public. The city school policy was adopted by ordinance 6 months before the comp plan. It is the heart, the soul, the very foundation of the comp plan. I checked this morning, and it is still not on the city's website, and it is very hard to get a copy of it. It took me 8 years. I finally got the whole copy 3 months ago. We're still trying to make photocopies and pass it out in the community. Portland Public Schools and the Real Estate Trust have denied and defied the city school policy for years. I'm concerned that they may undermine the Portland plan as a result. City staff acknowledges that Portland Public Schools is in violation of Title 33, 281.030. Portland Public Schools is also not in compliance with Metro Ordinance Chapter 8 and with ORS 195-110. Portland Public School officials are continuing work on their long-range facility plan. And as I understand the laws, Portland Public Schools' long-range facility plan process must go through City Council with public input before being adopted by ordinance as part of the comp plan. I commend the Planning Commission, Gil Kelly, Steve Dotterer, and the city staff for their work on the Portland plan. It is a job well done. Many of the city school policies are addressed on pages 28 and 33 of the document you're considering to adopt. Please include the city school policy and the city school agenda documents in the list of related plans on page 8 of the work program. There is an urgency here. The school board on July 21st approved a strategic plan for the defragmentation of high schools, and they discussed a land lease deal at high-value sites. The public is not getting specific answers to questions. I also want to refer to the 2006 Flynn Blackmore PPS audit that says that goals for openness and transparency are not met. They still are not met. And I am submitting to you, so that there's no misunderstanding, a copy of the city school policy, the city school agenda, ORS 195, 329, and also the two letters that I referred to in my testimony. Thank you.
You please give those to the council clerk.
Good afternoon. I'm Carter Cummings. I'm here representing the Roseway and Madison South neighborhoods. The general plan for 82nd Avenue has not been updated in over 20 years. In fact, no plans currently exist for any current or future development in our area. Sorry. When you look at PDC's map of areas currently and future slated for redevelopment, there's a giant donut hole around our area, and it almost begins to appear like a red line district. Because of the way Northeast 82nd Avenue developed as a highway to the airport, we weren't fortunate enough to have the cozy storefronts found on Hawthorne, Belmont, or even Northwest 23rd. Instead, we have used car lots, fast food restaurants, and prostitution. But those of us who live in our neighborhood see a lot of potential for Northeast 82nd. We look at Northeast MLK and see what's been done there in the past few years and say, why can't this happen in our neighborhood? The demographics of our neighborhood is changing as younger families and couples move into the neighborhood. These families desire the goods and services that the Portland Plan's 20-minute neighborhood scenario calls out for. We also have a great interest in having the ability to walk or bike to these services to reduce greenhouse gases, which is another goal of the Portland Plan. As it is now, we get in our cars and drive. This spring, several of us were fortunate enough to work with students from Portland State University's Master of Urban and Regional Planning program. They produced a report called Imagine 82nd, which you each have a copy of. Part of what they did was have an open house, and over 125 residents of our neighborhood came forth to express their visions, their dreams of renovated 82nd Avenue. And the details of this went into this report. So we brought abbreviated copies for you today. The full copy is 84 pages long, but there's a link to it on the last page. And I want to leave you with one last thought. In our neighborhood, there exists a 26-acre vacant parcel of land that was once a landfill. It's identified by the state as a brownfield. The owner of the property is currently not in compliance with DEQ on maintaining the property properly. In April this year, two members of this council issued a call for building a center of sustainability here in Portland. Wouldn't it be a great idea to use that land and turn it into that center? Not only would it be a shot in the arm for an area in dire need of redevelopment, but it could act as a catalyst to attract other businesses, shops, restaurants to that area. With the excellent access the site has to public transportation, it could be Portland's showcase to the world for green, sustainable, and responsible development, turning an eyesore into an asset, and would prove to be a lasting legacy for this council. Thank you for your time.
Hello, my name, whoa, that's kind of loud, sorry, I project. My name is Dawn Rasmussen, and I am the president of Save Madison South, formerly, now it is now Save Northeast 82nd, and we are a coalition of about 2,300 active and engaged people, and I just don't want to step on Carter's toes. He obviously had so many good points, but this is an opportunity for the city of Portland, and I know so many times at the city level you struggle with public involvement. Here we have a group of very engaged, very focused citizens that are seeking to be a part of the solution. And we want businesses. We want jobs. We want to have green and sustainability. In fact, wouldn't it be kind of an interesting concept, like what Carter mentioned, is to recycle a landfill and make it a green area? Why not have Portland's green district instead of, we have the Pearl District, we have all these other districts, why not have Portland's green district? It could be a transformational process for 82nd Avenue. We have the people, they're willing to be a part of the public participation process, but again, we have not had any planning attention on 82nd whatsoever, and as we all know, we're grappling with some substantial issues with prostitution and crime, and, you know, as they say, you get what you're not planning for, and literally and figuratively, and there's been no planning, and it looks like it on 82nd. So we're coming to you and urging you, as you consider the Portland Comprehensive Plan, that 82nd Avenue could be considered at some point because, again, everything around us, there's Gateway Green, there's been work done in the Hollywood District, there's the East Portland Action Plan. Each one, each time, one of those things has just skirted 82nd Avenue, and we're hurting, but there's an opportunity there because we do have the people that are engaged, we do have people that are committed, and, you know, again, your biggest asset is citizen involvement and participation in the process. So we're coming to you saying, we're here, we're at the table, we're ready to go, tell us what we need to do, let's get this going, because it really is a great opportunity for the entire city. Thank you very much for your time.
Just one thing I'd note is that there's been a group of citizens along the 82nd Avenue corridor who are actively involved in the 25-year streetcar planning strategy, and I'd encourage your group to plug into that.
We have been.
Okay, good. Doesn't necessarily mean a streetcar goes literally on an 82nd Avenue.
Right.
They're also looking at an adjacent street, a quieter street for the streetcar. But
yes.
We have included you in that plan.
Yes, thank you very much.
I want to add one thing on the issue of the prostitution.
Yes.
I and the mayor and Commissioner Adams recognize that that is the first thing that needs to be addressed. The mayor and I are convening a meeting tomorrow with the police officials out there, and within a week or so, you're going to start seeing a presence and an approach that that I hope in a very short period of time eradicates that issue out there. We're all laser-focused on it.
And to follow up on that, we have been starting efforts to create a prostitution town hall summit, and we're targeting September 9th at Vestal Elementary, hopefully, to try to get everybody together on the same page.
And by September 9th, we ought to not be coming to you telling you what we're going to do, but show you what we've accomplished.
Excellent.
In this period of time.
Great.
And you should see a difference very soon.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Call the next three.
Next three are David Rice, David Ellis, and Wendy Ann Wright. 1 second. They'll be followed by Tom Becker, Virginia Butler, and Kenneth Ames.
Please state your name when you speak, and you each have 3 minutes. Anyone can begin. You'd like to begin?
My name is David Rice. I'm a former federal agency archaeologist, government planner and project manager, and university professor. I've worked in the Pacific Northwest in archaeology, history, and historic preservation planning for 40 years in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. Much of the research I've done in this area of the Pacific Northwest covers the time span from the opening of the Oregon Trail in the 1840s through the building of the railroads in the 1880s, covering the period of Indian Wars, the Gold Rush in Idaho, and so on. My point here is that the historic resources of Portland have a significance much broader than the city. And whereas historic preservation generally considers only structures and buildings that have standing value, there are also archaeological sites and archaeological materials in deposits in Portland. The essential point is that these artifacts and deposits have a significance that is regional. Take that into account when you are developing your plans for archaeology. I think that the context statement certainly will develop inventory databases of specific sites, buildings, and structures, but don't forget to include the significance of the tangible historic sites to the region, and that this has something that goes beyond the city itself. There may be some need for interim measures besides developing the plan itself. Interim measures would be actually for the recovery and protection of ongoing development and redevelopment that is done by city permit for construction. There ought to be consideration of ordinances that provide for some sort of screening for archaeological deposits in historic sites, possibly in special cases for monitoring of these kinds of sites. These are important considerations that you have some active plan for preservation in place, as well as developing and modifying the existing plan that you're working on. You might consider also the development of partnerships with Portland private enterprise, trade unions, the port, local industries to pursue historic preservation objectives and possibly looking into tax credits and tax incentives to cover for their financial participation in historic preservation. I would finally suggest examine ways to extend available cash funding for historic preservation planning through state and federal matching grant programs. Some of these programs provide for in-kind matches in cash. An example would be Army Corps of Engineers Section 22 of the Water Resources Development Act of 1974, generally called Planning Assistance to States. You might be able to take non-federal funds and with the assistance of Corps of Engineers in Portland District here in their planning assistance program to try and double
Sir,
your funding.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm David Ellis. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Association of Oregon Archaeologists, of which I'm president. And I'd like to say while this is what the city is planning is in the framework of periodic review, I think this is an opportunity for the city to really be in the forefront, both in terms of Oregon and nationally, in terms of addressing historic and archaeological resources at a citywide level. And I think sort of taking the long view, which we archaeologists are prone to do, you have in Portland, basically, you have 10,000 years. We have 10,000 years of prehistory and history. And that is an element that provides a unique element to the city that helps in a lot of ways to define who we are as Portlanders. Is that past? I think what has been proposed in the work program is excellent. It's the first time the city has really addressed archaeological resources at a citywide level and in a really systematic fashion. I think archaeological resources are addressed under Goal 5 in the statewide planning process. This, again, I think is a great opportunity for the city to do that, again, in a comprehensive fashion. I think in terms of moving forward from the research and analysis component of what's in the work program, we have excellent opportunity, again, to develop procedures and policies that provide a balance between protecting important archaeological and historical resources with the needs for development and growth. And finally, I will say the AOA, the association, is ready to step forward to assist the city in this process. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Wendy Ann Wright. I'm here to ask City Council to approve and fund the research and analysis portion of the Portland Plan Work Program in regards to historic and archaeological resources. I'm a student at Portland State University. For the past year and a half, myself, along with my advisor, Dr. Virginia Butler, have been researching how to improve the management of archaeological resources in the city of Portland. I am here today to make sure you know that not only is there a legal requirement to consider archaeological resources, but archaeology is really cool. Archaeological resources can contribute much to a city's sense of community, provide sources of social and economic capital, and cities across the U.S. have established policies to protect these important resources. Preserving history in a community is an effective way of uprooting long-held myths and prejudices held by people by helping recognize the diversity of human experiences and facilitating the discussion of our shared identities. Preserving archaeological resources can also have direct economic benefits, including heritage tourism, grant opportunities, and other various means. The many benefits of archaeological resources are best utilized when communities have a strong plan to identify and preserve them for the good of all citizens. The Alexandria Archaeology Program in Alexandria, Virginia would be a good model for the city of Portland to examine when developing a community-based archaeology program. The community-based programs in Alexandria include the Alexandria Archaeology Museum, part of the Torpedo Factory Art Center, which is a highlight of Alexandria's Potomac River waterfront, community dig days where the public can experience archaeology in a hands-on way, Tour de Digs, an archaeology bike tour on the city's 60-mile bike trail system, combining recreation, history, and alternative transportation in city planning. Archaeology has also helped the community of Alexandria remember and discuss its painful past of slavery and continued racism. Archaeology work in Alexandria identified the unmarked graves of freed slaves and resulted in the African American Heritage Park. And I'll just read you a quote from a resident in Alexandria and a member of Friends of Freedmen's Cemetery, Lily Finkley. "I have only lived in Alexandria 58 of my 61 years, and Black history has only recently become so important to me. Archaeology is the reason why." My daily bike ride, the potential power of archaeology in Portland might best be illustrated if I talk about my own neighborhood. I'm not going to make it in time. The potential impacts of archaeological resources by current developments, I can't.
Well, if you could continue, that would be great.
Okay.
How much more do you have?
This is it. Okay. From 1887 to 1891, my neighborhood was originally part of the city of Albina. In more recent history, the neighborhood of former Albina has been a central point of the Portland Black community. By 1940, half of Black Portlanders were confined to this area as a result of racist real estate practices. By 1960, four of five Black Portlanders lived in this 4.3 square mile area. More recent demographic changes in the neighborhoods have created tensions that could be addressed through conversation about its history. A community-based archaeology program in the city of Portland could create opportunities for neighborhoods like Elliott to reflect on their shared place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well done.
Next three are Tom Becker, Virginia Butler, and Kenneth Ames. They'll be followed by Carol Cushman, Melissa Darby, and Kathy Galbraith.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Hello. My name is Tom Becker, and I work for a cultural resource management firm here in Portland. I'm here today to encourage the council to adopt policies to better protect our historic and archaeological resources in the city of Portland. Although the city has been making progress in bits and pieces since the early 90s, I believe that a comprehensive policy would better serve the city and the resources. In 1994, the Portland City Council passed Resolution 35299, which reads in part, "The city recognizes that cultural resources, including archaeological sites and objects, are an important and dwindling part of the city's heritage. These resources are finite, non-renewable, and irreplaceable." In 1996, the city of Portland adopted a cultural resources protection plan for Columbia River South Shore with the purpose of satisfying a statewide Planning Goal 5 requirement to protect cultural resource areas in the city. The plan aimed to only protect pre-contact American Indian archaeological sites in the South Shore area, but acknowledged that such sites may also exist elsewhere. Since that time, and as a result of the plan, many archaeological sites have been identified and recorded in the South Shore area, and our understanding of the wetland and slough resources in this area has expanded significantly. However, during this time, several archaeological sites have been found in other parts of Portland, including at the Lone Pine Cemetery in southeast Portland, and several historic era sites that were excavated prior to building construction around Portland State University. In both of these cases, the archaeological sites were not found during part of a regulatory process, but because of concerned citizens aware of the presence and importance of such sites. If these few sites were found in these discrete areas because of citizen involvement, imagine the sites that are being missed in the rest of the city where citizens either are unaware or lack the authority to search for and learn from our shared cultural heritage. Other sites recently found across the city include a Chinook and Plank House site in St. John's, a 19th century privy excavated by University of Oregon along Nato Parkway, and most recently, an important American Indian site on the bluffs above the Willamette River in Oregon City that was documented in the Oregonian this week on the front page of the Metro section and on the editorial page. Although outside of the city of Portland, this recent site demonstrates the importance of the bluffs along the Willamette River, which stretch south from the South Shore area. The City of Portland has continued to make progress, producing documents such as the 2007 draft East Portland Historical Overview and Historic Preservation Study, and compiling a bibliography of Native peoples and archaeology of the Portland area. And much of the contextual information listed under subheading H in the plan has already been compiled by professors and students at Portland State, local cultural resource management firms, the tribes, and other agencies. In addition, several nearby municipalities have also created tools that the city could use to model our own ideas of how to best protect these resources. Across the river in Vancouver, they've developed cultural resource ordinances as part of the development process based on a predictive model. There's so much information developed already that getting this process started could be hastened by communicating with local partners instead of starting from scratch. Thank you.
My name is Virginia Butler. I live in Northeast Portland and in the Grant Park neighborhood, and have been on the faculty at Portland State University for the last 14 years and been an archaeologist in the Pacific Northwest since 1980, a long time ago. Thanks for giving me the chance to present some information related to the comprehensive plan document draft, particularly regarding the need to consider cultural resources. I want to reiterate what others have said. They have great potential to enhance community pride, help disenfranchise individuals and groups feel connected. They can boost local economy through heritage tourism, and they can conserve parts of the past for future generations to appreciate and learn from. As part of our interest in demonstrating the importance of planning for cultural resources protections and values in public education, I've been working with Ms. Wendy Wright, who you heard from earlier, to compile a list of all the local governments in the United States with local policies, ordinances, planning protocols for cultural resources. Ms. Wright has contacted every state historic preservation office in the United States for information on local government in their state with active programs and policies. To date, we have information on 54 local governments in 15 states, and I have a document that lists all of those states and entities that I'm going to present as part of the presentation here. Our thinking is we don't need to reinvent the wheel here in Portland. What we need to look for are best practices in other communities for how to approach the process here. What we found in this research is that there's a range of approaches. All of them, the best ones, are organically developed in situ, another good archaeology term, to address local community needs and priorities, as well as satisfy state, federal, and local laws. The strongest programs are those that have the most public support, including strong public outreach and community-based projects. And I'll say the strongest ones have a cultural resources staff person with archaeology and history background to oversee this process and build the connections between the various forces at work and that have the possibility for tensions, including developers, educators, private landowners, the general public, and local government. The closest local government with a comprehensive cultural resource management law is across the river in Clark County, as Tom Becker just referred to. Don't have time to go into that, but it does provide an approach that we can use as a start, and in the comprehensive plan, there's lots of elements of that Clark County model in place. It's not perfect. It would be a lot stronger if there was more community involvement, and that's very much what we promote with this comprehensive plan. Portland is a model city in so many ways. It promotes high livability. It strives toward sustainability with growth management, and it should be a leader in its approach to caring for and promoting cultural resources, too. So I strongly advocate the comprehensive plan, which includes the resources, cultural resource protection.
Mayor, can I ask Professor Butler a question? Now, I could ask you later because you're my next-door neighbor, but I'm curious, since we have this opportunity, do you envision some formal role between PSU and the Planning Commission in this process, or more particularly, would you suggest that someone from your group be on the Public Engagement Committee, or is there some formal role that you'd like established?
I think that someone from PSU would be glad and happy to serve in on a commission or some kind of review process and certainly help with the comprehensive plan development. We want to help with that. In terms of whether PSU would literally have control of some of the funds and do some of the work, that's something that would have to be worked out. We have resources and lots of great students to draw on for this.
Is there the possibility of a capstone here? if it was?
Absolutely. You know, PSU promotes Let Knowledge Serve the City, and this is, would be a great opportunity to work towards that.
I would just add, I've, as Dr. Ames knows and Mayor Potter, I have spoken with Mayor Gil Kelly about doing an intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University to actually do the archaeological preservation program part of our Portland plan. So that is something we are still actively pursuing, and I'm determined to see it be a part of our Portland plan.
On that note, I'm Kenneth Ames. I'm professor and chair of the Anthropology Department at Portland State. I'm also immediate past president of the Society for American Archaeology, which is an international organization with over 7,200 members dedicated to research, interpretation, and protection of the archaeological heritage of the Americas. Perhaps more pertinent, though, I'm an archaeologist with exactly 40 years' experience. I realized I started 40 years ago this summer. More than half of them here in the Portland metro area. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify and for the inclusion of archaeology and historic resources in the work plan. It's taken a long time, and I'm ecstatic to see it. This will place Portland among an increasing number of cities and municipalities that are working to protect their cultural heritage. Port Angeles just hired an archaeologist, for example. I want to address the plan specifics. It ensures the city will be compliant with relevant state and federal laws and regulations. It's nice to know you're compliant before you find out about it later. The plan puts planning for heritage and archaeological resources precisely where it belongs at the beginning of the process. It's very early in the process, ensuring that they receive, that the resources receive due consideration rather than late in the process, which usually leads to surprises, which are always costly in time, money, and goodwill among stakeholders. There's always concern this will delay a project. It delays projects when people postpone it. They think, well, this will go away. We don't have to do it. I don't want to think about it. And then suddenly, as the folks clearing brush up above the river discovered, there may be something there. It expands the city's current protections, as Tom was noting, of Native American heritage and archaeological resources to include the entire city and to include the city's 19th and 20th century heritage as required also by state and federal statutes. As the recent Oregonian story demonstrates, the area's Native American heritage is not limited to the South Shore. So, for example, in the late 1980s, Portland State excavated a 10 to 9,000-year-old site in a front yard in an old neighborhood in Lake Oswego. The site, the 500-year-old Chinookan site in St. John is actually deeply buried underneath railroad spoils, so you can drive around and think there's nothing here, and there may well be things there. The city also has a rich 19th and 20th century archaeological heritage record, especially for people and groups not well covered, as Wendy was talking about, if at all in the documented based history. In the southeastern part of the U.S., for example, our knowledge of African American history is virtually all archaeological. You know, the written record is silent about the experience of people in that area often. Closer to home in Oregon, archaeology has made significant contributions to our knowledge of the 19th century Chinese experience in the West, in eastern Oregon, for example. And it's clear that we have the potential for that and much more in Portland. So again, I thank you very much. I urge that the plan go forward as written, and I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Next three are Carol Cushman, Melissa Darby, and Kathy Galbraith. And they'll be followed by Stuart Buettner, Lily Mandel, and Paul Leisner.
Thanks for being here, folks. State your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. I'm Carol Cushman, League of Women Voters of Portland. The League commends the Planning Commission and the Bureau staff for the thoughtful approach they've taken to the public engagement work program. We strongly support creation of an officially recognized citizen involvement advisory committee responsible for advising the public engagement process. Assigning three planning commissioners along with at least nine community members, as suggested in the latest draft, will ensure a strong connection with the commission, a manageable number of participants, and inclusion of people reflective of various Portland constituencies.
Updating the city's comprehensive plan is a complex undertaking. The Planning Bureau needs to make clear to the public that this project has several phases, includes a multitude of issues, and will take probably 4 years to complete, and will produce Portland's guiding document for the next 30 years. Failure to do so runs the risk of confusion and involvement fatigue by the public. The draft work program outlines a range of opportunities for involvement, from one-time surveys and summits to ongoing in-depth participation. The League wholeheartedly endorses this approach. We do hope, however, that the Bureau will devote extra attention to forming study circles, task forces, and special committees. These groups could be asked to conduct in-depth study with staff support on special topics by looking at academic research and innovative approaches employed by other communities. And I did not know I was going to be following a number of archaeological comments here this morning. Afternoon, sorry. Furthermore, stakeholder groups made up of individuals with differing viewpoints could tackle particularly contentious issues and work on finding common ground. The Portland Plan offers us a golden opportunity to consider carefully some of the most critical issues facing our city in the future. This can be accomplished most effectively by engaging interested community members in ongoing, in-depth participation. Finally, the public engagement process should be looked upon as an opportunity to build capacity by involving as many residents as possible, provide opportunities for affinity groups to work with other community groups outside their area of interest to find common ground, and build the political will Portland will need to implement the plan in the decades to come. Thank you for considering our comments, and the League looks forward to participating in this process.
Hello, I'm Melissa Darby. I'm from Northeast Portland, and I'm an archaeologist and a former member of the Portland Landmarks Commission. I was on there 8 years until last October. One of the things I did while on the Landmarks Commission is if a development came up in a sensitive area that I thought there might be archaeological material, I required that the developer, as part of the development process, take a look at that, do a survey, test, and whatever. And that's why a couple of the sites up at Portland State were identified and excavated, and also down by the railroad tracks or the railroad station. So it was sort of an ad hoc way of getting some things covered to make sure that resources weren't damaged. And it worked, but I think a more comprehensive approach is better. And so I'm here to support this preliminary work program and the archaeological element. But we also have a great record in Portland of historic preservation, I must say. I was part of some of that. And we also have, Gil, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have quite a bit of the National Register nomination or buildings and landmarks already on the Portland State or the Portland GIS database. So a lot of this infrastructure that is being requested in here, the base is already here, and we've already built it up, and we have really good staff that support the Landmarks Commission, and we do get grants from the state of Oregon and so forth to help keep that program running, and I appreciate your ongoing support. Even though I'm a former Landmarks Commissioner, I'm always interested in what they're up to. So support the program. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Galbraith, and I'm the executive director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. We are a nonprofit historic preservation, education, and advocacy organization. We're located at 701 Southeast Grand Avenue in the oldest commercial building in Portland's Central East Side. After our $2 million investment, we opened in early 2005. We are doing as much proactive education as we possibly can, offering 320 programs since 1992, serving more than 43,000 people. What distinguishes us from other heritage organizations is that we have one of the five largest collections of historic building artifacts in the country. And I view our two warehouses of collections as our collective failure to preserve over the years. We have many of the only known surviving elements of a number of glorious Portland buildings that have been lost over time. I've reviewed the work plan, and as a former municipal planner with lots of experience in comprehensive planning, I have the following comments. I applaud the inclusion of historic resources and archaeological resources in the work plan. It is the implementation that we will be very carefully watching. There are many references to the long out-of-date historic resources inventory, which truly needs to be redone. The tragedy we will find when we revisit that inventory is how many buildings have been lost since that inventory was completed in 1983. My organization, through our continuing Cornerstones of Community program, have documented 1,284 standing buildings in the city associated with Portland's African-American heritage. There is very little overlap with the historic resources inventory of the city. Our recent grant for $3,800 to the Portland Visioning Grant Program to GIS map those properties was not successful. The point I want to make is that these properties really need to be included in any valid inventory if we are committed to being inclusive about our heritage. There are a number of major trends and issues that are discussed in the work plan, and we really need to address the issue of incompatible infill in the traditional neighborhoods, the loss of historic resources, and the erosion of neighborhood character, which is such a large part of what makes Portland the special place that it is. When we address build-out under current city regulations, we will see clearly the implications for vast losses of vintage buildings just simply because of the underlying zoning that does not match the resources that are in the neighborhoods. When we discuss loss of low and moderate income housing and gentrification, I think back to when we were developing the Interstate Urban Renewal Plan. I'm a member of the ICARAC Advisory Committee, where we spent a lot of time debating, is gentrification happening? What is it? What does it look like? All you had to do is look out on any given street to see the changes in population to know that it was in full swing. Under the discussion of the historic resources inventory and the work plan document, there's some discussion about focusing on buildings that are at least 100 years old, when in fact the National Register cutoff date is 50 years old. The last comment that I want to make is that we need a plan that achieves long-term historic preservation, not a plan that leaves preservation last. And I have a gift for all of you, which is free because these are over 25 years old. This is the 1980 National Historic Preservation Week poster, which the theme of that year's Preservation Week event was Preservation Equals Reusing America's Energy. And I have one of these for each of you with a rubber band to go with it, because one of the things that we know in the historic preservation field is that there's no greener building than an existing one. Thank you.
Please call the next.
The next three are Stuart Buettner, Lily Mandel, and Paul Leisner. And they'll be followed by Mark Bartlett and Don McGilvery. Okay. All right, so Stuart Buettner, Paul Leisner, and Mark Bartlett. Come on up. Yes.
Did you read the...
Mark Bartlett.
Okay. Please come forward. You state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
I'm Stuart Buettner, a former professor of art history and architecture at Lewis and Clark College. I live in the Woodstock neighborhood, so I think that I'm speaking to at least one of our number in front of me today. I unfortunately forgot to bring with me the email proposal that the Woodstock Neighborhood Land Use Committee has sent to the Planning Bureau for this particular process today. But I will, after I have done it for 32 years in front of classes, try to wing it for you today. Basically, we are concerned, I think, with the notion of small or what we consider skinny lots. Lots that are either R2.5 or R5 that may be partitioned so that they are just 2,500 square feet. We realize that the City Council in 2003 went ahead and approved the building of certain of these houses, which many in our neighborhood consider to fly in the face of what we would consider to be neighborhood visual consistency. In that email document, we basically suggested the following, that there be consideration given to rethinking the use of those R2.5 lots so that they accomplished basically two things. That is, building houses that are essentially what we would consider to be townhouses that are one against another with a common wall and that also have a common roof line. A number of those have been developed in the southeast Portland area that are visually very striking and that fit in perfectly, I think, with the neighborhoods in which they exist. We are interested in doing this to preserve urban density, to allow developers to go ahead and accomplish infill, to design buildings that are green and sustainable, and for energy preservation. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Paul Leisner, and I'm here to speak to the continuing concerns by the Southeast Dublin Neighborhood Program Board about the public involvement process for the Portland Plan. I was very excited to hear Mayor Potter talk about this as a real community plan, not just a plan by the Planning Bureau. And I thought some of the comments that Carol made from the League of Women Voters were right on about really involving people in meaningful ways through task forces and a whole a variety of different mechanisms. I think one of the concerns that I have, I've been involved in a number of the processes in recent years to try to develop some better understanding of how to do good public involvement. One was a public involvement task force, which was commissioned by Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Saltzman, and also Mayor Potter. I followed along with the Bureau Innovation Project 9 toolkit process and was on the Community Connect Committee. So I've been doing this for many years. I was very excited about the Portland Plan, thinking this was an opportunity to really showcase these principles and approaches. And unfortunately, it appears to me that the Planning Bureau is pretty much doing their standard approach to public involvement. They've held lots of meetings, but they haven't actually done the principles that were talked about in those processes, one of which is involving people early, involving people in the actual design of these kind of meetings so they're the most useful for the community, making sure that you have staff on board who have strong backgrounds in public involvement, understand the strategies of how to do that. That hasn't really happened so far, and I think one thing I would encourage you all to ask is just to ask the Planning Bureau to explain what are they doing differently now that we've had all those processes that have identified all these different principles and best practices? What are they doing in the Portland Plan to do something different than they've done in the past? So I think that is very important. Also, with the Citizens Advisory Council that's being created with the Planning Commission, please make sure that you have people on there who actually have a strong background in how to do good public involvement. It's great to have all of us on there who are citizens, but you need to have some people with that expertise on there as well. I was excited by all your enthusiasm and engagement on the archaeology, and I would just ask that you would also show that same kind of enthusiasm for the Portland Plan public process. I think there's a great opportunity for you guys to use this as a real model for how we can engage the community better in the future. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Mark Bartlett. I'm a Mount Tabor neighborhood resident and president of Southeast Public Land. I'm here today to comment on the specifics of the resolution and the plan. Like Paul, I've been trying to be involved in this for some months now, and I second that we have not yet seen the response. And I'd like to suggest a few things that the city can ask the Planning Bureau to do. I'd like to see enumerated each and every project and plan that's going to be worked on underneath this comprehensive Portland plan, because right now the public nor you are probably aware of every single issue that they're working on. Someplace we have to see what it is that they're doing. And I'd like to know who's working on it, where, you know, this sort of thing, as far as the open meetings, can the public attend and see exactly what the discussions are. Second, I'd like to see that the Citizens Involvement Committee be involved in the work groups, and that they are the primary voice of the citizens and not the secondary voice to the Bureau recommendations. I'd like to see the citizens actually have a more meaningful say rather than just commenting on the recommendations of the Bureau. And as far as selecting the members of the Citizens Involvement Committee, I think it should be an open and transparent process as stated in Goal 1. And it should even involve some self-selection if people are willing to expend the time and effort to do so. I'm attaching in my submission today the OAR goals about the evaluation and also the ORS Statute 197, which discusses the interaction between the city and the LCDC as far as the work plan. Thank you.